That's Jimmy Smith on his famous Hammond B3 with Step Right Up. It's from his 1962 album, Bashin', the unpredictable Jimmy Smith. This is Lead Stories. I'm your Trace Lead, and my gosh, I'm telling you, life is proceeding at 100 miles an hour with the Trump administration that is embattled, as is the opposition, the Democratic Party I'm referring to specifically. With 17 executive orders issued within his first 10 days in office, President Donald Trump already has won the record for the most prolific use of the backdoor presidential power that requires no congressional input. Trump's executive actions are being spun as a man wasting no time in getting things done. But it's clear he prefers the go-it-alone method of decision-making. His business model, after all, is autocratic. So why should he change it just because he's president? He likes it this way. Trump probably was not expecting to be opposed this early in his term or so strongly. He probably reasoned that even if challenged, he could weather the storm. But the massive Women's March on Washington the day after his inauguration served notice that this new way of doing things will be matched by new types of opposition. The Women's March and the protests against the travel ban are such new types of opposition. And it's sparking a revival, not just in the United States, but across the globe, in terms of the relationship that people have, many millions of people have, with the United States. And it's not necessarily good. So we're going to talk today about the clues that Trump and his administration are miscalculating their strength and power. And we'll talk also about the irony that the way the Trump administration is doing things is actually fueling global anti-U.S. sentiment. Well, we could tell, and we told that early, we could see that happening very early in his campaign, the Trump way of doing things. And there's only really one way. It's his way. And I think there was a kind of psychological ease with that because he was accustomed in the way he did business to basically dictating what should happen, what people should be doing, and, you know, ruling with a kind of iron fist where people basically did as they were told. That attitude clearly hasn't changed in the mind of Donald Trump. The United States, the entire United States, and the world for that matter, is simply an extension of his business and his way of doing business. And in many ways, he sees the people as a very annoying inconvenience. They get in the way of him ruling the United States and the rest of the world. But somebody needs to be paying attention, I would think, to the signs that it's not going too well for him at the moment. Today, in Congress, we had the Democrats actually finding a backbone. They didn't have a backbone for a long time. They lost their spine a long time ago. And they were just coasting through the past 8 years particularly, but long before that, they adopted the attitude that they really didn't have to work too hard. Perhaps they didn't find the presidents, both Republican and Democrat, too objectionable. They didn't find the policies too objectionable. They didn't have to do too much work, whether it was a Republican or a Democratic president in the last several years. And their constituencies really didn't demand anything. But just 10 days of Donald Trump did enough to signal that this cannot continue. People are now abandoning even the token leadership that was there. They said it is of no use. We are ahead of the leadership. We will lead the charge. It's up to you whether you decide to get on board or not, but we are moving and we're moving on our own. We can't do any worse than what we have now. And I think out of sheer shame and embarrassment, the Democrats had to rally and say, well, after all, we are elected people. We better do something. Let's catch up. Let's catch up with the people because they are way ahead of us. I'm using as a marker here the Women's March on Washington, which, as I've said on the program, was a remarkable expression of citizen leadership. Remarkable. And not only did it show the United States of America, the populace, the general populace that had been suffering in silence and putting up with the abominable level of leadership that we had, it stoked the fires of resistance all over the world. Now, that means that people were of similar belief all over the world. They would not have supported a move like this. And the move was very specific against Donald Trump personally, specifically, and Donald Trump's administration secondarily. But Donald Trump was the lightning rod personally for these negatives that people had come to identify as completely unacceptable in anybody, let alone a president of this country. His behavior was abominable. His manner was abominable. His vision was abominable. His belief system was abominable. And so it stood to reason to this massive group of people that nothing good could come out of this political situation with Donald Trump unless there is a radical change of approach. and he didn't seem like he was moving in that direction. So they were proactive in their opposition, which, of course, embarrassed the Democrats. They had never seen this kind of reaction, perhaps only as far as the 1960s or the Million Man March. But these actions are not normal in the United States, where the people have always traditionally had a deep belief in the capacity of government to be in sync with the needs of the people. The United States, the Americans, let me put it this way, Americans are extremely trusting. And that has been a history of being very trusting of the government, forgiving a multitude of sins, overlooking a number of discrepancies for the sake of saying, well, we're American, we'll stick together, we'll get through it. But this kind of approach to governance is very different. And, of course, the intention here was to, from the very beginning, to stoke the fires of fear. This is perfectly in line with the way Donald Trump operates personally. You can see it even in the way he treats his wife. I don't know if you had an opportunity to see a clip of Donald Trump just as the ministers or the members of the clergy were making or invoking the Lord, who also happened not to be Muslim that day. There was a rabbi, there was the son of Billy Graham, staunch Christian, very Christian. It was very Christian, and the Jewish element always was put, also was put in there, you know, to give, that's Donald Trump's version of diversity. No imam in sight. God is not Muslim. But you can see very early on what Donald Trump and his administration intend to happen in terms of reviving the concept of white nationalism, white supremacy, and pitting groups against each other so that while they are absorbed in fighting each other, the Trump administration will proceed with its plan of restoring white dominance worldwide as part of their gift. This is their historical gift. The records will recall that Trump single-handedly restored white America. And it restored the historic pattern of world domination. These are the two things that matter to Donald Trump. And of course, money goes without saying. As a matter of fact, today, two of his nominees were delayed in their confirmation hearings over their past histories with shady dealings. We had Steve Mnuchin, who is a nominee for Secretary of the Treasury. We had Tom Price of Georgia, the nominee to be Secretary of Health and Human Services. Both the votes on both these candidates were delayed because the Democrats finally found a spine to say, oh, we ought to take a look at this, and we cannot vote until we get some clear answers about their conflicts of interest in the past. And then we have the pending vote on Betsy DeVos, whose family personally donated as much as $200 million plus to the cause of promoting charter schools. And of course, it started out in Detroit, many cities in Michigan. And she is being considered for Secretary of Education. The Democrats are stalling on that vote too. So there is a good thing happening here, that the Democrats are finding a way to stand up and do their jobs. And it is all because the people kicked them in the butt by being ahead of them in facing down Donald Trump and his minions, who are already in place, many of them, in his administration. This is a good thing. And even though it is a very serious situation that we're in, we always have to take a look at where things are working right. And especially because this was initiated by the people. And all over the world where there is a resistance to the United States / Donald Trump, it is because the people, not the individual government so much, but the people are pressing the buttons. In Britain, where Donald Trump is expected to pay a state visit, the Brits are already at work saying this is not supposed to happen. We don't want it to happen. And they are signing petitions by the tens and hundreds of thousands to have that visit canceled. There is a revulsion about Donald Trump. And the thing that is so sad is that he enjoys it. He likes it that way. This, in his view, in his distorted view, is an admission and a recognition by the people who hate him of his power. I know it sounds odd, but it is, the more I am feared, the more I am hated and reviled, the more powerful I am. And that's what drives this guy. He likes power. He summarily, when the acting attorney general, Sally Yates, said that she was not going to abide by Donald Trump's travel ban, which is an anti-Muslim action, whether he admits it or not. Everybody else, so many people understand that it is an anti-Muslim action. She said that she was not going to recognize a duty to defend the Justice Department and the United States against this irrational executive order. She was fired. And oddly, the person seeking to take her place, not her place as acting, but to take her place as the Attorney General, Jeff Sessions of Georgia, in 2015, when Sally Yates was before congressional committees being vetted for the post of acting of Attorney General, it was Sessions who pressed her on the question of whether she would have the strength and the integrity to face a president down if the president should issue an unlawful or illegal order. And she said yes. And Sessions now finds it perfectly within the rights of the president of the United States to fire her because she refused to empower the Justice Department to enforce this order. And You see how politics works, right? Very interesting. She stood up. This, too, was a signal to the moribund Democrats that far more people have far more courage than they as a party do. But it still comes down to the fact that in the recent changes that we have seen, the opposition primarily is the people, not the politicians. It's the people. The politicians have had to move, the Democrats, that is, and some Republicans too. We can't forget that. So brazen is Donald Trump's conduct and behavior that it is an embarrassment even to the Republicans, to many Republicans. I told you yesterday that the Koch brothers, I mean, you can't get more Republican than they. They are very, very disappointed with Donald Trump. Donald Trump now has the, you know, he's a guy about ratings and polls. He has the lowest ratings right now of any president coming into office at this stage of the game. He hasn't even completed his second week, and he has caused all of this damage. And I might add, it's not like he has alternative plans. He's putting forward alternative plans. Nor are the Republicans, who are, of course, aiding and abetting him in his crazy behavior, putting forward any kind of alternative plans to what it is currently exists. The thing is, I referred to this when I did that program on the politics of vengeance. It's a very nasty, nasty tone that this government has taken on, a very vengeful tone. I'll give you an example. Nikki Haley, the governor of South Carolina, who has been made ambassador to the United Nations. You know, run-of-the-mill person and quite decent. What did she say? I mean, within a week of officially being named to the United Nations, she tells the United Nations, all of the nations of the United Nations, she says, you better back us up, meaning the United States, or we'll be taking names. Now, who talks like that? What are you going to do? Grab each ambassador and beat them up in the parking lot? This was a very demure, a very, you know, a nice, even-tempered person. At least that's how she presented herself as governor of South Carolina. And now she's talking this way. Back us up, because we'll be taking names. What does that mean? That is bullying to the extreme. That is threatening. That is, those are the actions and demeanor and the attitudes of a thug. And this is what the Trump administration increasingly looks like. People who are in office, and immediately their whole demeanor is about taking revenge. Their whole demeanor is about trying to figure out how to beat you up, how to force you to do what they want you to do. And this is just a week. She went from demure woman and governor, you know, she, that's not to say she was a weakling. She was a very capable and regarded generally capable and well. for the job, well suited for the job. She gets named, and immediately she's talking about, we'll be taking names. You better back us up in the United Nations. In other words, you better let us have our way or we will destroy you. This is the kind of rapid transition. And just so far, the people that that Trump has named, this is a kind of attitude they have. They are mirroring Trump's own behavior, his own demeanor. Back us up or we'll be taking names. I think the screening process at the United Nations better include a search for brass knuckles. In that purse, she probably is carrying brass knuckles so that she can grab people by their shoulders and beat them up in the parking lot. This is scary. It's even scarier when you think that this is the attitude that informs actions, because they both are related. Your attitude informs your actions. Your thinking informs your attitude. Your attitude informs your actions. And this president clearly has no problem showing his bad, bad thinking and his bad, bad attitudes and his bad, bad actions. Now, what does this mean for life in the immediate future under this president and his band of cohorts in Congress who are going along with the game? Going along with the plan because they think that, of course, their jobs depend on it. This is a very serious question. And now people are beginning to ask the question I've been asking all along. We assume that Donald Trump is mentally stable. We assume that he's okay. Psychologically, that is not to be assumed. Yet there seems to be no way, at least now, no way to expect that anybody could do anything about it. He's taking us to hell in a handbasket, and we seem to have no choice but to go along with it. I don't know. I don't know that we should hold on to that as a given, but I do know that we are seeing good signs, not from the leadership, however. The leadership is still kind of calculating when and if and how to move. Despite the fact that anyone with a practiced eye can see that we are in more trouble as a nation than we care to admit. We're in very deep trouble. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to know that there's going to be a crash, an economic crash. That you don't have to be a rocket scientist to know that we are on the brink of war. That is not an exaggeration, in my view. It is the natural extension of taking an analytical look at what we're dealing with here as the nation's leader. And you don't have to be a rocket scientist to know that this administration is aiding and abetting terroristic attacks against it through the way the leadership is conducting itself. It's inviting terror. It's actually begging for a reason to engage in a war. We cannot be casual, and I don't mean to sound like, you know, I'm totally without hope here. I'm saying let us examine the situation as it exists. The economy is tanking. The reason you have all these billionaires and multi-zillionaires involved in matters of politics is that they see that they have to make some kind of effort on their own to salvage the situation. They know it's tanking. And their involvement in politics is actually a way to defend themselves and their wealth. If they could take a hands-on position in pushing the nation in the direction it wants the nation to go, it must be done in order to protect their assets and their economic interests. That's how you have to read it. They don't want to be in politics. At least I don't assess that most of them want to be in politics. They want to make money, and they want a governmental system that will help them make even more money and protect the wealth that they have. That's the only reason they're involved. They couldn't care less whether you have a job or your child is going to a pretty decent school or whether you're reasonably healthy. It's all about money. And right now, although they're not saying it publicly, they are already seeing signs that the U.S. economy is tanking. It is not solid. It's going down and down and down. I am not a Wall Street type, but every morning when I read the news coming from Wall Street, all I could see are reports that say losses, stocks, bonds, unemployment. The indicators of a sound economy are all pointing up the same thing. It's not looking good. For the wealthy. And as they say, if they are having a cold, we have pneumonia. The rest of us have pneumonia. But look at these signals that we've been getting. The worse it gets, the more angry and vengeful this nation becomes. And it will target the people, and it will target other nations that mirror the population of the people it holds responsible for them not making as much money as they ought to be making. You think it is incidental that these seven countries are targets by Donald Trump? You think it's just accidental that it happened that way? That the ban is from these countries, which of course are Muslim, but Muslim majority countries. But it's also about these countries having incredible resources. And they've been in the sights of successive U.S. governments for a long time. But now under Donald Trump, and you cannot ever sever this from his political life, he is a clear advocate. He is the representative to the ultra wealthy all over the world. So you say, well, you know, what's the problem with Iraq? What's the problem with Sudan and Iran, Somalia, Libya, Yemen? How is it that you decide these are the countries, despite the statistics that say not one act of terrorism in the United States has been committed by any person from these seven countries? Not one. And that is going back to 1975. So there's a different reason. We're not being told what it is, but there's a different reason for Donald Trump singling out these countries. Don't be surprised if you wake up in the morning and you learn that He has ordered attacks against these countries, military attacks. This is how these things go. So, keep in mind, again, I insist that we keep in mind that Donald Trump is a mentally unstable person, psychologically unstable, and is apt to do anything, just as he's issued these orders and, you know, on the spur of the moment. And he's doing these things now because under executive order, he really doesn't have very much of an opposition. And so he doesn't have to consult with the military. He doesn't have to get the votes of Congress. He doesn't have to do any of these things. He can just do them. And the first part of conditioning the people toward how they interpret and react to and interact with his administration is to first get them psychologically conditioned. He's an autocrat. We should come to recognize that and accept it without question. He's brilliant. We should accept that without question. He knows what's best for us. We should accept that without question. He's doing a lot of things in our name that we don't like, but we should accept that he has a greater vision than we do. I'm sure you could recall major figures in history who behaved in exactly the same way. But he has established this early as the benchmark of his administration's attitude. He has Stephen Bannon, who is as close to a Neanderthal as you can get. And I just explained to you the dramatic change in behavior of the governor of California, of South Carolina, Nikki Haley. You better back us, or I'll be taking names. What are you going to do? But she's saying it to mirror the attitude of her boss. She has already conditioned herself fully to operating with the knowledge that she is fully compliant with what he expects her to do and to be. And you look at the attitude of the people around them. They are offensive. They are grotesquely out of whack with what diplomatic behavior, what that level of occupation demands as a standard level of behavior and conduct. They have no respect for people. They don't talk to people with respect. Steve Bannon says the press should just shut up. Just shut up. Who talks like that? And who tolerates anyone talking like that? Well, of course, Donald Trump. But we are in a very, very scary time because this leader has already declared in so many ways he is not to be contained, he is not to be opposed, he will have his way. And his way is not clearly by the polls, by the showings in these protests, his way is not the way we want it to be. So what do we do? I continue to have deep faith in the power of people to change things. But we have to first recognize that we have to take it on ourselves. We've been cut off for a long time. Politics has been done to us for a long time. We have not been active participants in shaping our individual and collective destinies for a long time. We have left that up to the power structure that is actually doing us in. Does it take this to get us back in line, to get us conscious again, to revive the notion that we inevitably are principally responsible for our political futures? If it does take that, well, it is happening now. And we are seeing indications that the concept is spreading and taking hold. People are deciding now, I can't be looking from the sidelines anymore. I've got to get involved. What are we doing to get involved? And I don't mean just showing up at a march. And that is good. It was important and it was necessary. Now comes the structural work that has to be done. And it's not a 1-2 process. It's all to happen at the same time, unfortunately. We all have to dance on both sides of the fence. We have to support movements that are worth supporting. And we have to put our hands to the wheel to make things work, to truly live out this idea that democratic principles are those that involve the people who are elected to govern and the people who are governed. It's not one group doing it to the other. We know increasingly this is going to be an administration that is vengeful. It will not, therefore, operate in a humanistic way. The psychology already has been imprinted on this administration that its principal purpose is to make people pay. For what? I don't know. There's a whole range of reasons why the people must be made to pay. But when you're dealing with an administration and a president whose own psychological makeup should be enough to scare you into action, then you know you have no other choice but to get into action. I still maintain that those systems that could work, let's get them working better and being more relevant to our collective survival. And this is why you also have to bring the axe down on those systems that have betrayed that investment and that belief. I've maintained for a long time that the Democratic Party was not worth supporting. It wasn't worth even existing. It had become so completely irrelevant and corrupt and useless in the midst of all these battles that are raging against the people. The Democrats were more concerned about their next break and their next Hawaii vacation. They were not interested in confronting Barack Obama. There's a lot of awful things that that administration did. Now that he's out of office, he's trying to put his toe back into the lake to say, well, you know, he's very concerned and so forth. But what, you know, I'm sure that there might be some usefulness to his actions and sentiments. But the fact is, when he was supposed to perform, he didn't. When he was supposed to look out for the interests of the people, he did not. His administration literally blew 8 valuable years, almost a decade. And if happened that Hillary Clinton was successful in coming into office, we would have had an unimaginably horrible situation to deal with. We would have a crook running, a real bona fide crook. And we would also have had double the trouble. Because, Bill was going to be back in action pretending that he never left office. And the two of them would use the apparatus of the Democratic Party to make things even worse. That's what we had. So the people were betrayed by the Democratic Party. They were betrayed by the Republican Party. But at least the Republican Party was a bit more in tune with what Republicans wanted and what the people needed, the Republican people. The Democratic Party was and still is to a large measure awash. There are signs that it's getting the message that it ought to do something because it is so embarrassing that all this time was spent achieving practically nothing. And then we have the rise of the independent parties who also have lost their minds. In the middle of this clear and evident boiling pot that we're in, they couldn't figure out what to do. And they're mimicking the same actions and attitudes of the major parties. We don't have to talk to our people. We don't have to explain anything. Just send us some money so we can carry on as if the party belongs to one or two or three people and they could do whatever they want. The people have gotten a raw deal for a long, long time from every possible angle, which is why, again, I hold on to the possibility of a genuine, people-centered, people-run opposition system, a system, which means you have a plan, which means you are going about things in a very scientific way. You're not losing or wasting the meager resources that we have, but you have an idea that definitely what we're experiencing is really not what we want. And it is up to us to construct the reality that we want. Not just for ourselves, but for all over the world. This crazy madness that occurred on Friday night at all these airports, I saw the film of news organizations, and you can see in the people's eyes and in their actions as they came out of the airport to the boisterous welcome that they got, you saw that this was humanity at work. Nobody was looking at what race you are, or what religion you are. They were responding on the basis that this was an inhumane act targeting Muslims. And if you're against any kind of so-called policy like that, you must remove these impediments first from your own thinking. You have no use for racial discrimination. You have no use for geopolitics. You are involved in people-to-people contact and using whatever assets you have, including just your voice, even, and your body showing up to shame this government into doing the right thing, then you got it. These are our weapons. I don't know that Donald Trump necessarily lost any sleep over any of this. But then again, I don't expect this to resonate with him in the way that people want it to have it occur to him that he's on the wrong track. Oh, you could forget that. He will go to his grave thinking and acting exactly this way. I was referring to that little clip on the day of his inauguration when he turns around and his wife Melania is behind him. He says something. When he turns around to face her, her face lit up in a huge, huge smile. Then he says something, and she looks crestfallen, like somebody had just stabbed her in the heart, whatever it is he said. And it was like night and day. So I'm saying, if this is the way he treats people who are supposedly so close to him, he would not necessarily make a distinction treating people in the nation and around the world the same way. This is essentially who he is. This is essentially how he operates. And he expects that you will understand and respect that. It is all about how he sees you and what he believes he is entitled to do. And you ought to let him just go unopposed in doing these things. It's a horrible shaping up of an administration. There's a reason for a lot of things that are happening, which is to put in place an architecture that will accomplish the immediate tasks, but will also serve to accomplish future tasks. This is the hope, a total reorganization of the United States and its so-called national culture, so as to make it plausible, acceptable, and supportable that this inhumane way that looms right before us is the way to go and the way to reclaim America's racist identity. So pay attention. Glad to see that the Democratic Party found at least one or two vertebrae. But don't depend on that being a long-term proposition. They'll be bought off, or they will sell themselves out one way or the other. But it's absolutely going to be up to us to find a way to save ourselves individually and collectively. And that's the sermon today. You know, you have to say these things because people would be liable to, you know, go from minute to minute. You have to always stop and see the long term because that's how they think. Immediate action for long-term purposes and long-term gain. We have to learn to think long-term and act in the immediate situation to guarantee our long-term survival. Thanks so much for listening and for allowing me to vent today. I really appreciate it because these things have been on my mind for a while. And, the events as they are unfolding, we can't allow the opportunity to go by without connecting some dots. By the way, you know, you can listen live to this program by calling 712-775-6850. You can listen by phone, calling that number, 712-775-6850. And you can listen to the last five shows by calling 701-719-9368. 701-719-9977. That's 701-719-9977. I thank you so much for joining me today. Let me know what you think about this program. And you can do so by sending me a note at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories at gmail.com. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. We'll see each other again tomorrow. Bye-bye.